Seat, and good morning. If we've not met, then a particular good morning and welcome to you. My name is Matt. I have the privilege of being the minister here at Maybridge. If you picked a favourite stone structure out of interest, how many said Stonehenge? Dome British, nice. How many said the pyramids? Taj Mahal? Colosseum? I think that might be the winner, actually. I'm going Colosseum. It's the one that I've actually been to. It's pretty cool. Anyway, that's loosely related to what I'm going to talk about this morning. We're spending a few months every Sunday walking through the New Testament letter of 1 Peter, written by a bloke called Peter in the first century, who was a close personal friend of Jesus, saw him up close, and then Peter had his life turned upside down when he realized that Jesus was actually God, and then he saw Jesus rise from death. That sort of thing tends to have a formative effect on your life. And Peter spent the rest of his life representing Jesus, telling people about him, and he writes this letter to Christians everywhere who are in a bit of a tricky situation. And he began in the first chapter, if you remember, if you were here, by telling them big picture stuff about God, what God has done through Jesus. And then chapter 2, where we find ourselves now, he starts getting practical. And he writes these words. I'm going to read these words to you. They're written to Christians everywhere. It may even help you to close your eyes while I read this to you, okay? But you don't have to. And Peter writes this. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, "See, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious, but to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, and a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." Amazing passage. Now, this passage is written in what is called a chiasm. Now, allow me to be a little bit nerdy for a moment. This matters. A chiasm is where the author structures what they have to say very deliberately to make a central point. And there's actually loads of chiasms in the Bible. It's not a secret pattern that's there for mysterious people and mathematicians. It's just that in ancient Hebrew writing, it was a way of saying, this is the main thing. This is the main point. And so you get a structure, maybe something like this, where point A begins and ends the passage or the text, and they mirror each other in some way. And the same for point B, and the same for point C. And then point D would then be the main idea. It's not always A to D. Sometimes they're a lot bigger than this, but you get my point. The main message is in the middle. And the chiasm of today's passage looks like this. It begins and ends, broadly, with the idea, avoid bad things and do good. Then the second and the second to last point is about identity. Jesus' identity rejected by people but precious to God, and our identity not rejected but precious to God. Then, the two mirroring points, point C, that we have a God-given role. We're living stones, a spiritual house, a priesthood, a nation, God's possession. But the central point in the passage, the thing that Peter really wants to get us to take home is this. Jesus is the cornerstone, and responding to him is the question of life. That's the main point. And what this means is, well, no, Peter does want us to think about all of these things, but what I've labelled D is the main point. Jesus is the cornerstone, and how we respond to him is the issue of life. So what I'm going to do is say a little bit about each of the sub-points, and then say more about the main point, because I think that's what Peter would want me to do here. So the first one, and I'll just put the verses on the screen so you can see them. It's about avoiding bad and doing good. It begins and ends with this message. Get rid of malice, get rid of deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander, abstain from sinful desires, get rid of them. And what I really like here is that a lot of people think that this is what the main Christian message is. They think it's point A, avoid bad things, do good things, try to be good people. And that's in there. We do want that to happen, obviously, but it's on the edge of the message. It's the least important point in the passage. It hangs off the stuff that's more important in the middle. Peter, the man who wrote this, was transformed. He actually personally did a lot of the bad stuff that he mentions himself. But then he encounters Jesus and his life changes. But his biggest message is not, here's how my life has changed. It's there, it matters, but it's not the main point. The main Christian message is not about nicer Christians. Or to put it in another way, our good behaviour is on the periphery of the Christian message. It's not the main event. It's an offshoot. But just on this for a moment, imagine your life without malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander. Imagine how clean it would feel, how good it would be if you had nothing to do with these things. That's what abstaining is. Even if you're on the receiving end of insults and gossip, living well. And the way to get there is not simply trying harder. It's getting spiritual milk. It's growing in your salvation, which basically means not earning things in life through graft, but having God transform you through grace. And it all happens so that when God brings the world to an end one day, he will be glorified, he'll be magnified, he'll be celebrated. Now, we could talk about that all morning, and it's wonderful, but it's Peter's fourth level point, not his main one. So we have to move on. Second sub-point. Our identity, a bigger deal, a bigger message than what we do, is who we are in Jesus. Now look at how we find our very identity. The central truth thing about us comes when God chooses us in some way. He wants us. I remember when I got married to Naomi, and it was like, wow, she chose me? Really? Is she insane? And you may still ask that question. But she did, and it was and it is a wonderful thing. Being chosen by God has that same personal, powerful dynamic. He genuinely wants you and me. In contrast to how we naturally are with him, and we reject him in so many ways, even though he's this living stone, and we'll talk about that more later, our identity is connected, as you can see in this structure, with his identity. He's God's chosen one, and through him we're also chosen. He's the way that God gets us. Now, you're probably aware, we have all these modern debates at the moment about identity, and it's often this way of approaching what it means to be human and to have worth. And it's actually all self-generated or built by what other people say. And it's flimsy, and it's constantly changing. And everybody seems to be deeply insecure and needing to prove themselves or show themselves to be special all of the time. And it's exhausting. But God gives us an identity. Not just as precious individuals, although we are, but as a people, a group. It's not just me, it's you and me. It's all of us. And this is just amazing. Our identity, our true position as people, is not about just believing a few factoids about Jesus, but we are existentially and permanently changed. It's like getting a forever passport for a new country as a citizen, but alongside this wonderful extended family. The creator of all things gave us mercy and made us a people. That's our identity. And it's still not the main point. The next layer is about our purpose. Look at some of the words: living stone, spiritual house, holy priesthood, holy nation. Now, Peter, who wrote this, was a Jewish man. So his whole way of seeing things is shaped by his culture. And his culture is expressed by the stories and the laws and the customs of the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the Jews are a chosen people, not because they're better than anybody else, but because God decides to use them to display who he is to the whole world. And as part of that, there was a temple in Jerusalem, a central place of worship, and there were priests, men from a certain tribe who were eligible, and from them, the Levites, some were picked to serve as mediators between God and the people and to care for people. And what Peter says in this passage is nothing less than a complete re-understanding of those ideas. After thousands of years of Jewish history, Peter spends 3 years with Jesus and then says, it's different now. This guy is the fulfillment of our culture, basically. This was a shocking thing to say. Now, Peter's saying, the people who've responded to God's son are like living stones. In other words, they're like Jesus. And now we're a chosen people and a priesthood and a nation and a spiritual house, just like the temple. From Jesus onwards, it didn't matter whether you were Jewish or you lived near the temple or you were a Levite. Everybody could be involved. And it had a purpose to declare God's praises. In other words, to make him known to the world, to shine a light on him in how you live and speak. This, again, was huge, but it's still not the main point. And so with our chiasm, we've got three sub-points. We have a purpose in Jesus. We have an identity in Jesus. We avoid bad and do good. But the main point, the thing it all rests on, is this. And I'm going to reread this. In Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now to you who believe, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, and a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. Now you may notice most of this is quotes. The New Testament writers were always at pains to say, this Jesus stuff is not out of nowhere. It was planned before creation. It was predicted in the Old Testament. And now Peter's quoting two particular things in the Old Testament. These are hyperlinks, basically, to Isaiah and to Psalm 118. Why those? What's he doing? Well, in Isaiah, which was written by a man surprisingly called Isaiah, the context was a criticism of the religious leaders of Jerusalem. And basically Isaiah was saying, guys, this is not going to last forever. He was being God's mouthpiece in this moment and saying, I'm going to put a new stone down in Zion. And this was a big deal because Zion is the place where the temple was, the center of Jewish worship. And it sounded like God was saying, I'm going to build something new in that place that you're all really used to. I'm going to build something new with a new cornerstone. Now, I know almost nothing about stonemasonry, but the cornerstone or the foundation stone or the setting stone was the first stone that you set when you were building a foundation on a building. It's vitally important. Every other stone is then set in reference to this stone. The whole structure depends on it. This was God saying, I'm going to put a new point of reference, a new basis, a new foundation, slap in the middle of Mount Zion, the spiritual heart of the nation. Centuries after Isaiah said this, Jesus both taught on Zion and was executed there. A new point of reference for life and a new basis for God's people, the foundation. The other quote, Psalm 118, was actually quoted by Jesus himself decades before Peter wrote this letter. In Mark's gospel, we read that Jesus was speaking to some of his opponents, religious leaders, much like the religious leaders that Isaiah was criticizing. And Jesus tells these religious leaders a story, and at the end, he quotes this line. He says to them, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. And those decades earlier, Peter would have been, as a younger man, stood there listening to this, Seeing this man, he's come to regard as someone special, as God come to earth, speaking against the highest religious authorities in the land and making things really clear. These religious leaders, they're supposed to be the builders. They're supposed to build the people to follow God, and they're not. And they've actually rejected Jesus, which is tragic because he's the foundational part of the whole thing. But why do they reject Jesus? Why would anybody, if you met him personally in this way? When builders reject a stone, certainly as a foundation, it's because they think it's too weak. They think it's untrustworthy. It can't take the weight of the whole building. Because you need a really strong stone, a really solid strong stone to be the cornerstone. What happens is that very religious people reject Jesus because they don't trust him to take the weight of their lives. So instead they take the weight on themselves. They think, well, I'm a trustworthy stone. He's not, but maybe I am. People stumble on Jesus, not because he's a stone that's sort of secretly placed to trip them up, but because if you're trying to get on with life, building your own thing without him, taking the weight on yourself, eventually he's there. He's unavoidable. At some point, you will encounter him. He'll get in your way. And that's good. Peter's main point, the foundation for anything about who we are or what we do, is this: that Jesus is the rock on which we stumble or stand. And I've got to say, the temptation today is to talk about Christianity in terms of all of the benefits that we get, of which there are many. But at the heart of it, it's not about us. Everything else stands or falls on the cornerstone. Look at the structure of the passage again. I've got to say, in my time, I've heard loads of Christian talks and I've read loads of Christian books that have got really good stuff in them. But if you step back, I think there's a lot of stuff out there that's focused on points A to C. Do good, know your identity, have the right purpose. How much stuff that we read in here actually comes down to those sort of things? And in one sense, that's good. It's fine. These themes are in the Bible. Peter talks about them. But if they're not built on the foundation, if the emphasis is not Jesus and who he is and what he's done and acknowledging that he's the cornerstone, what's the point? All we end up with is motivational TED Talks and self-help fads and fluffy spiritual experiences with loads of pressure on ourselves to do. Those are not good cornerstones. They're too weak. No, the main thing is still the main thing. Jesus is the rock on which we stumble or stand. And this deliberately brings things to a head. Do you believe in Jesus or not? And I don't mean, do you believe he existed? And I don't even mean, do you believe that he was and is the Son of God? Belief in this sense is less about whether you agree to some facts and more about, is the weight of your life transferred onto him? Is he functionally the cornerstone in your life? Or is it something else? Is he the foundation, or is he a stone that you've tried to awkwardly jam in to your own life building project? Is he the foundation, or is the weight on you? Your life is built on something. That's unavoidable. It's just a question of what it is. If you're here this morning and you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, the stakes are high, but the opportunity is here. The message that the church has to share is not about being good or your identity or your contribution to society, much as those things do matter. It's that Jesus can take the weight of your life, all your messes, your mistakes, your pride, your problems. He is strong enough. You couldn't pick a better stone. If you would call yourself a Christian, is he the cornerstone right now? Not when you were doing well back in 2022 or something. Right now. Or have you got overly focused on the secondary stuff? It's easily done. Doing good, thinking about your identity, what's your role in life? Important questions, but not the main thing. Not the main thing. And I'm going to leave you with that question as we continue to worship.
Thank you for that, Matt. That's a lot to think about, isn't it? Where are we at with God today?